This is Mind Salad, a program of diverse weekly discussions about mental wellness with a rotating panel of licensed professional mental health counselors on a variety of mental health topics with guests and information to help you sort through life struggles. The information that is provided on this program is for informational purposes only and is not meant to treat or diagnose any mental health condition or be a substitute for therapy. This week, your host is Lexi Ellis from Into Freedom Counseling.
Good morning and welcome to Mind Salad, a diverse discussion about mental wellness. My name is Lexi Ellis and I'm one of the four hosts. I'm a licensed professional counselor and the owner of a small group counseling practice in Colorado Springs called Into Freedom Counseling. We serve a wide range of people in the community, from kids to older adults, with the majority of our clinicians specializing in work with teens and young adults. We're located on Austin Bluffs Parkway, directly north of the Nursery Fallon Gardens. Today, my guest is fellow mental health clinician Stephen Banta, and we are going to be talking about the effects that stay-at-home orders and pandemic fear has had on couples and families.
Hi, Lexi. This topic is really interesting to me because my area of clinical interest is in couples and families, and I've seen a lot of really interesting things come from the pandemic that affects couples and families. I started to notice some things in my own marriage and my family, and we had to be very intentional about how we proceeded in order to make sure that we were thriving as a family during these hard times. I started to notice a lot of similarities in my clients, but they did not have the awareness to recognize the root of the problems or the skills to create solutions. So I wanted to talk about that today to hopefully help some listeners who may still be experiencing adverse effects from the quarantine orders.
You know, I think it helps other people to feel more comfortable acknowledging and talking about their struggles when somebody else brings it to light. So thanks so much for being willing to be vulnerable and transparent about your own experiences and difficulties at home during this quarantine. Can you be a little more specific about what issues you were seeing that came up for yourself and for your clients?
Yeah. One thing I noticed was in my own family, it really just brought to light existing issues that we were already having, just struggling communication patterns and just ways of interacting that weren't the most healthy. And that was what I really noticed with my clients as well. I found that the stay-at-home orders and being in close proximity 24/7, it really just exposed and worsened existing issues. And so I found that couples who were not functioning well when they were separated during the day due to work, they saw a drastic increase in their arguing and overall stress. And I've seen that there's an increase in separation rates, but there's a decrease in divorce rates. And I think that's likely due to the inaccessibility and inconvenience of legal services to finalize the divorce.
I will say that the number of requests for counseling throughout 2020 for couples was higher than it has ever been. And it makes sense since we know that existing problems are typically magnified during times of extreme stress. So I think that's really important what you said about existing problems that actually got worse as opposed to most of this being about new problems that just came up. It really just magnifies what was already happening and what was already not working well. And then, you know, you put those things essentially into a magnifying glass, and that just exacerbates everything. One of the very first things that I thought about when we were quarantined was that the level of domestic violence and child abuse was going to escalate exponentially. Going to work or school is often the only escape somebody has from abuse and violence that's in the home. And I remember just feeling heartbroken for what I knew was probably going to start happening. And what's really interesting about that is that when I was talking to other people about this perspective, many people hadn't even thought about that as an effect or a consequence of people being locked at home. And so I realized that that really highlighted how our own experiences shape our own perspectives. What information can you share with us about those type of statistics throughout the pandemic?
Yeah, that's a really good perspective, Lexi, and you're absolutely right. Sadly, a lot of these issues that are already happening are only, you know, increased, as we were talking about. I have a friend who works at the National Institute for Change, and they see a lot of domestic abuse cases. And he was telling me that there's a large increase of their domestic abuse that they've seen. And interestingly enough, there's a significant increase in female perpetrated violence, about 50-50 on who's abusing who. And then there's some studies done by the CDC One showing child abuse incidents that result in hospitalization being increased from 2.1% in 2019, so before the pandemic, to 3.2% in 2020, which is a 50% increase. They also did studies showing that adults reporting having suicidal ideation in 2020 was double that of 2018. And also that 1 in 10 of the adults they studied started using a substance to cope with the stress of COVID-19.
Yeah, and you know, as staggering as these statistics are, I imagine that we really, at this point, and you know, still halfway through 2021, don't really know what the full effects were. I imagine that in a year or two, when the studies have been done and the research comes out, that those numbers will be even higher.
Yeah.
Aside from the effects that the pandemic has had on married couples and on families, what other issues have really been magnified that you've seen?
Yeah, so another really big issue that I have seen is fear, which results in stress. People are just afraid of the pandemic, afraid for themselves, for their loved ones, afraid for their communities, and they just live in this state of chronic stress. And this chronic stress has been shown to decrease physical health.
Mm-hmm. In regard to physical health, I've heard people joke about the COVID-15, kind of like, you know, the freshman 15, in regard to gaining a lot of weight throughout the year, not only as a result of the stress itself, but due to the fact that most places of all places of fitness were completely shut down for a large part of the year. And most people don't have fitness equipment at home or the space or financial means to have fitness equipment at home. So having this main means of blowing off steam or coping with stress for many people, myself included, having this taken away caused significant issues in and of themselves, and I think perpetuated that stress cycle. And then, you know, that kind of goes back to some of those other statistics we were talking about with substance abuse being, you know, people turning to substances as a way to cope, and then also, you know, perpetuating violence as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this chronic stress, it also spills over into relationships and has been shown to decrease marital satisfaction as well. It decreases effective communication and causes us to want to increase withdrawals. We want to separate from those who are close to. Another big one is financial stressors, and they are a significant cause of marital conflict. Mm-hmm. You know, that loss of job income, job stability, and security is a huge increase in stress in the home.
I think, I don't know the statistics around this specifically. I don't do a lot of marriage work, but isn't that finances tends to be the number one issue already in the home with married couples?
Typically, yes. Finances is the number one conflict point.
Right. So imagine when one or two of people in a marriage then lose their jobs, how that just goes through the roof. The stress around finances just goes through the roof. I can only imagine. And, you know, along the lines of that, we've already kind of mentioned people turning to substances. I want to add that during the pandemic, there was a significant increase in drug and alcohol use, but also deaths. So people dying from overdoses and substance use. According to the Mental Health and Substance Use Fact Sheet for Colorado, during the pandemic, deaths due to drug overdose increased nationally, primarily driven by synthetic opioid use. And in the 12-month period ending in September 2020, the U.S. reported 90,200 deaths due to drug overdose in 2020. And that's up from 70,000 deaths in 2019. That's a huge increase in deaths just from drug overdose. If you are just joining us, this show is Mind Salad, a diverse discussion about mental wellness. My name is Lexi Ellis, and I'm the owner of a group counseling practice in Colorado Springs called Into Freedom Counseling. Today, we are talking about some of the effects of the pandemic on our homes and families with clinician Stephen Banta. Stephen, what are some of the ways you have seen children affected by the pandemic specifically?
I've found that children are often affected the most because they don't have a fully developed understanding of kind of why everything is happening. A lot of them, they're staying at home and they're pulled out of their school and they don't really understand all the ramifications of what's going on and why that's happening. And then them being at home makes life hectic as the parents are trying to figure out working from home while also having the kids home all the time, which is just a huge stress added to the family system. Kids are experiencing a large shift in their sense of normalcy and routine. And one thing I've learned with working with kids is routine is so important, and that is just completely gone for them. So that just adds more stress. They lose their sense of community, which is really hard for kids, especially in their development. When you look at adolescence, having that sense of identity found within their peer group is crucial, and then they don't have that anymore. It pushes them further into online interaction to try and get that sense of community, which just comes with a whole nother bag of problems. It increases a risk for underdeveloped social skills, and there's also, sadly, during COVID, been a large increase in online predator activity.
Problems that lead to more problems that lead to more problems. And there's just so much here that we could spend more time on. You know, my passion is really working with teenagers and kiddos. And I can tell you that I have, you know, this past year working with a lot of the teenagers that have come in, they have mentioned a lot of the things that you just mentioned about, I just want things to be normal. I just want my routine. And they literally were unable to function in this routine at home because there really wasn't a routine. They were supposed to be spending 8 hours a day on a computer, which, to be honest, no human should have to do, let alone kids, right? And that's the only way that they can gain interaction with other humans, especially their peers. And like you said, you know, that age of finding their identity and learning who they are and learning how to be social and learning social norms, I mean, all those things that happen during that age are just out the window. So I have to say that this past year has really shown me how devastating the quarantine and the lockdowns were for teenagers, and how dangerous really it is for teenagers to be in isolation. So many important things are happening at this age, which really shapes their future. And I shared some statistics previously on a podcast that I did specifically talking about teens and mental health, and I think it's relevant here as well. According to NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Health, 50% of mental health issues begin at the age of 14. So this is outside of the pandemic, outside of the quarantine, just normally 50% of mental health issues begin at the age of 14. And by the age of 24, 75% of mental health disorders will have started to impact daily life. So you take this time of being in high school and you look at those statistics that already existed about, you know, mental health, and we didn't even go into statistics on suicide, but, and then you compound it with teenagers being in complete isolation, of being inside their home in potentially dysfunctional patterns, or even potentially abusive, right, and neglectful. And there might be alcohol abuse, or might be physical abuse, emotional abuse. So you take a kid outside of their normal routine, you put them in isolation away from their peers, which is the most important group that they could be around. And then potentially they're now in an environment where there's abuse, right? And so all of those things are just really putting our teenagers in a place where, you know, some of those suicide rates are just skyrocketing because of it. And you know, to be honest, this is one of the effects of the pandemic that hasn't really been talked about a whole lot. I think, you know, nationally and politically, you know, everybody's looking at the big picture, you know, but we're not looking at one of the most important pieces, which I think is our teenagers' mental health, our youth, right? And so that's just, you know, where I'm really passionate about. And so that's immediately where my mind goes to, and just knowing the devastating effects that this has had on our teenagers. You know, going to a little bit of the research and the statistics on suicide, according to the CDC, there was a huge spike in teen hospitalization for suspected suicide attempts between February and March in 2020. And female adolescents between the ages of 12 and 17 have been visiting the emergency department at a rate of nearly 51% higher as the same time frame in 2019 before the lockdowns. 50% higher. That's just so astronomical and so heartbreaking. So now here we are with the aftermath of all of the lockdowns from COVID. And the big question, a really big question, is what do we do? How do we as humans, as a community, as mental health clinicians, not only help to pick up some of the pieces, but to move toward a healthier place?
When I interact with clients struggling with kind of some of these COVID stresses, I really have the same focus as if they're not, because I think that that's kind of the root of a lot of our problems is the same things. Like we were talking about earlier, is that COVID didn't bring on new problems.
Right.
It just worsened existing ones. So that's mm-hmm. what I'm really looking at. So my main goals are increasing self-awareness and stabilizing immediate stressors.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the first things we can do to kind of help relieve some of these issues is ask yourself what the problems are and where they're stemming from. Oftentimes, we aren't even aware of why the issue is happening. We can get caught up, especially when we're in a place of extreme stress. We get caught up in just this reactive place, and we don't evaluate what's happening and try and be proactive in finding a solution. So the first thing that I have found is if we can try and control how we respond to certain mm-hmm. situations, that alleviates so much stress just right off the bat and brings the conflict level significantly down. So if you find yourself in a hard situation, just think about your response. Maybe instead of saying, "My wife has been bugging me a lot about being messy in my work area," maybe you can look at it from a different perspective and think about how you can word things a little differently. Possibly say something like, "I'm home all the time now, and this creates extra stress for my wife who is trying to keep our house clean." And that just kind of creates a more holistic look at what's happening. And there's a couple techniques just in that one instance that I want to break down that are really helpful for how we can communicate with each other. So the first is that second statement uses what I call an I statement. And I statements are extremely helpful in addressing issues without placing blame. So, you know, you can say, "I am noticing this issue," instead of, "You are doing this." So that first statement earlier of like, "My wife has been bugging me," that's an accusatory statement. Whereas opposed to the second one, "I am home all the time now," it's looking at kind of why things are happening and bringing yourself into the equation.
I will say about that, it sounds great. And it is one of the most difficult things to do, is to not necessarily to change your statement, although that is very difficult, but to change, you know, in between the stimulus, whatever that is, something happening and my response to it. It is really different to take some space in that and learn how to do something different. And I would venture to say one of the most difficult things we can ever do. And also one of the most important, right, to be able to learn how to respond instead of react. And then in that, you know, of saying like not placing blame, I think part of the difficulty in that is sometimes people want to place blame
mm-hmm.
because it makes them feel better about what's going on, right? Especially if everything feels out of their control, they want to put the blame somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody getting to the point where they're able to say, you know, "I don't want to place blame. I just want to talk about the issue." That in and of itself is a huge, huge leap of growth, because that can be really difficult to do. And also one of the most effective, right, is to say, like, "I don't want to just project my anger or blame onto you. I actually want to figure out how to do something different so that we can function, you know, in a more healthy way, so that we can have better communication." And so I think what you said earlier about increasing self-awareness, that is where it has to start. An increase in self-awareness of how, not only how we're reacting, but also how we can move outside of that reacting, so that no change can happen without that self-awareness first, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is incredibly hard to get these I statements down well. I still don't do them very well. I found that I can be really good at manipulating an I statement and say to my wife, "I see that you are doing this. Not helpful. So
you're still using the I statement, but you're still placing blame.
Right.
Yeah. Great.
So yeah, they're pretty tricky, but when you're doing them right, it's just so effective at how you can de-escalate a situation. And that part about placing blame that you're talking about, Lexi, that's also huge. And that kind of leads me into the next thing that I did in this, that statement I had earlier, which is, you know, you ask yourself, what is my part in the conflict? Because we're so quick to look for something else to blame. Mm-hmm. But in reality, all I have control over is myself. So I need to look at an issue and try and discern, what did I do to create this situation? Like, where do I have to take responsibility? You know, where am I accountable? And that's a huge part of resolving an issue, is if a person is able to own up to their part and work through their part. A pretty common analogy used in couples counseling is that marriage is like a football field, and you have each partner on either end of the field, and you have to come to the middle to meet and thrive. But if one person isn't willing to come to the middle, then it's not going to work. And that's where this personal responsibility mm-hmm. piece comes into play. You know, are you willing to look at an issue and say, well, where's my 50 yards worth of work that I need to own up to? Where did I contribute to this? Because it's never just a one-sided story.
Right. And I think a piece of that that's really difficult for people is, aside from the taking ownership, that tends to be very difficult, I think, for most people to be able to say, I was wrong in this way. But what I have seen come up with that is that people say, well, if I take responsibility, that means that they don't have to, mm-hmm. right? And that kind of is defeating the purpose, because we're not in charge of what other people choose to take ownership of. We are only in control of our part and what we can do and what we can change, right? And so that's, that's so important.
Another one that I think is just really important, especially in times of high stress, but makes it even harder in times of high stress, so I kind of want to, like, a catch-22, is having grace and compassion with the people you're closest with. Oftentimes, it's the people that we're closest with that we let see our ugly sides the most, but we really need to focus on, I think, letting things go. And one way that kind of helps me get into that mindset is just telling myself that the other members of my family are under similar amounts of stress that I am. You know, this problem is not unique to me. These feelings are not unique to me. They're going through it too. Mm-hmm. And maybe I can cut them a little slack because of that. And along with that, I just ask myself, is this something that I can let go without a conflict? Or do I need to address it? And usually for me, it's a gut feeling. Like, if I can start to feel an issue like churning in my stomach, that's when I know, like, oh, okay, this is something that needs to be addressed. I can't just let it go. And that's going to be different for every person, just where their threshold of, you know, what they feel like they need to address is versus what they can let go. But I really can encourage all of our listeners to consider, can I let something go? Or do I need to address every little thing and make a conflict about everything?
You just hit on a really controversial thing, which is, you know, letting things go. And, you know, sometimes people think that to have a healthy relationship, they need to address every issue there ever was and resolve it. And that's not true. There are issues that, like you said, you need to ask yourself, is this something that I need to address? And if you do, you probably don't need to do it in that moment. Because when we are in a high state of alert, or, you know, we can start to feel ourselves getting really angry and our heart being faster, right? When we're emotional, that's the last time that you want to actually try to address something that needs to be addressed, right? Because mm-hmm. it's just going to be led by emotions. To ask that question of, like, is this something that's important enough for my relationship that I need to actually address? And on the other side of things, you know, I'm thinking about all my clients that are people pleasers and that don't like conflict, that let everything go. Mm-hmm. And that inevitably builds resentment. And so just to be very, again, aware of, is this just something that's kind of irritating me? And so I want to blurt something out. or is this an actual issue that we need to address? And those are vastly different things.
And I think that's a really good point that you bring up about not addressing it in the moment. And that leads me actually into my next thing that I wanted to talk about is, and bear with me, Lexi, this sounds silly, but taking a timeout. And I'm not talking like go to your room for 15 minutes and think about what you've done.
Go sit in the corner.
Right. Yeah. No weird punishment shame. It's an adult thing, and it's actually really helpful in reducing stress and calming down your stress response and allowing you to think more clearly with your head instead of being controlled by your emotions. Mm-hmm. So timeouts can help us, they calm us down from stressful interactions. And I just really want people to be intentional when asking for a timeout and ensure the other person that they are not just dismissing them, that you're not just, you know, walking away from an issue. I really recommend setting a time that you can regroup and address the issue. Just, hey, I'm really heated right now. I need 20 minutes to kind of cool off and think. And that can take an escalating argument and just completely stop it in its tracks. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't lead to a shouting match anymore. It doesn't lead to however it is that people fight. Just taking that time out to cool off is really, really helpful. And during the timeout, I recommend grabbing a piece of paper and writing down the points that your partner is trying to make. One thing I've found that has been really effective in couples counseling is adding this little aspect of the timeout. Because I've noticed that usually when we're arguing, we're so focused on getting our own points across, we're not listening at all to what the other person is trying to say. You know, we're just so focused on, I'm hurt, I'm hurt, I'm hurt. And that's what we're trying to communicate. We don't listen to the other person saying, I'm hurt, I'm hurt, I'm hurt. So during this timeout, I encourage both people to step away and try and think about what the other person is trying to say. And usually when I first start having people do this, they aren't able to do it. Mm-hmm. They step away and they get out their piece of paper and they're like, oh shoot, I don't know what they were arguing about. I only know what I was mad about. Mm-hmm.
They start writing down the things that they want to get across.
Right.
One thing I want to add to this, you make some great points. One thing I want to add is that it's very helpful to have a conversation beforehand, like before you're in a conflict with your partner. It's helpful to have a conversation about this idea of a timeout.
Oh, absolutely.
If you try to do it while you're in the moment and this has never been incorporated before, it can lead to further escalation of conflict, right? Because then the person thinks, you know, what the heck are you doing? You're walking away from me, right? And so to introduce this idea when both people are, you know, and this is for partners, this can be for parents and kids, right? But to introduce this idea when both parties are calm and there is no conflict, to just say, hey, how about we try to do something different? And these are kind of the guidelines for it. Like, if I say that I really need to take a timeout, then we both agree that this is what it's going to look like, that I'm going to take 20, whatever the amount of time is that's decided on, right? I need like a day for myself. Like I did 20 minutes does not work for me. I know that that's kind of like the timeline. 20 minutes, that doesn't work for me. But whatever it is, you agree upon it beforehand. So that way, when you're actually in the conflict, you both are in an agreement of this is what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, very true. Definitely you need to discuss it beforehand, or like you said earlier, it's just going to cause just a whole nother slew of problems and just escalate the situation further. And one thing that I wanted to just end with these solutions is that each situation is unique and the solutions to the problem are just as unique. So these are just tips to help you find the solution, but the process of finding the solution is still up to you. It's just ways to communicate better, ways to handle conflict better. But the problems are unique and, you know, how you're going to handle them is that's up to the individual. One piece that I wanted to just leave with is, are you committed to lowering the amount of conflict and stress in your marriage and family?
Thanks so much for that, Stephen. And thanks for joining us for this episode of Mind Salad. My name is Lexi Ellis, and I'm a counselor at Into Freedom Counseling. If you are looking for a counselor in Colorado Springs, we are currently accepting Medicaid and Insignia insurance, as well as private pay. And if you are looking for a counselor specifically for issues with your marriage, feel free to reach out to Stephen at our practice. You can reach out to us through our website at intofreedomcounseling.com or intofreedomcontact@gmail.com. And until next time, remember that our journey here on this earth is about progress rather than perfection.
You've been listening to Mind Salad, a discussion of mental wellness issues and topics with a rotating panel of mental health providers. Heard every Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on KPPF. And be sure to listen to the podcast on Podbean.